We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. I am your host, D-Bake. I am joined with me today by New Jersey Insight. Welcome to Cage My IQ.
Hey, great to be here. I'm really excited. Can't wait to talk about these upcoming fights with you.
Yep. This is a buddy of mine from our MMA community. We got a bunch of people that are just big, avid MMA fans, and a bunch of them are have podcasts or getting podcasts started. He actually just started last week doing a little bit of snippets of 1 to 2 minute videos breaking down his predictions for fight cards. And I'm liking the fact that you just started doing that.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to, we have a nice little tight-knit little chat group and community, and I think we all get along pretty well. You know, we can, you know, argue about the fights, discuss them, like them, and, you know, especially during COVID, it's nice we get to know other people from around the world, and, you know, a lot of the Brits are real active in the chat. Then you sometimes run into some little kid trolls that want to troll you, and I have a good time with it. You know, I like to mix it up with people and argue, and give my opinion on the fights, and I've been watching for, you know, a long time, and I, you know, attended them back in the day in 01 and 02 back in Atlantic City when it was banned from Vegas, so, you know, I go way back with this stuff. Am I always right? No, but, you know, I like to discuss it, though. I like to hear good opinions like yours and a couple other guys in the chat.
Definitely, but before we get started with the preview, and just like everybody know, this is Cage by IQ. You can follow us on all of our socials on Twitter at Cage IQ, on Facebook at Cage My IQ SB, and on Instagram at Cage My IQ. And then now when we go live, you can follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/CageMyIQ. We should be going live this Saturday, doing a live stream of UFC 260. That's in the works right now. So I'm just getting people to come on and watch the fight and then to just give their predictions and then to just BS. So keep a lookout for all that. But just like I said before, today the big thing is UFC 260 preview. What is your first opinions of this fight card?
So
before we go into predictions,
The fights keep dropping off, which is, you know, and I've been following Dustin Poirier. Yeah, each one that gets dropped off, he's kind of getting more grumpy about. It's definitely not at this point a pay-per-view strength card. I mean, this is one that, you know, I usually, if it's really good, I will purchase it as a good human that's trying to support the UFC. But as you know, when Tyrone Woodley is the co-main, I mean, that's a little hard for me to throw up my dollars that I work hard for. You know what I mean? So it's kind of disappointing of a card at this point, you know?
Yeah, it sucks that with COVID that it's affecting some of these cards. It just affected the UFC on ESPN, which sucked. I was looking forward to that Gillespie-Riddell fight. That got pushed back, and now – they pushed back their Ortega Volkanovski because of somebody in Volkanovski's fight group tested positive or was near somebody, so they had to push that back. I'm wondering where they move it. Like I mentioned it on Monday, I have a feeling maybe they move it to be like the co-main event of 262, which is the Michael Chandler fight with Oliveira. Maybe they move it to the co-main event of that, which would be good for that card. It just sucks for this one because after you said after Stipe Ngannou, it drops off.
Hardcore drop off. And you know, it's the, you know, you got to give the UFC credit. They've done well with with dealing with COVID and giving us our money's worth on most occasions. But this one might be one. I remember was it the Nunez maybe two fights ago was really weak pay-per-view. Or it was like, I forgot what it was, but it was, I think it was her fight. And she might have, and she's going to destroy the person anyway. And it was, there was a pay-per-view, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe we have to buy this one. You know what I mean? And I think I might have purchased it as well and not streamed it, but we never stream it. We'd always just buy it. But yeah, so this one is tough. But again, the UFC's done well through COVID, really. I mean, provide us with entertainment. So I'm not too mad. But, you know, if you say, what do I think about the whole card? When Woodley is the co-main event of a pay-per-view, there's enough to be said. You know, he's 39, 38 years old.
Yeah. What sucked about the Nunez one was it was three title fights and all of them, well, you had the no contest, then you had that one that ended quickly, and then you had the main event, which didn't live up.
But
I will say the prelims of that card were amazing. But you could watch the prelims on ESPN. Yeah, I mean, or that ESPN
card,
Plus,
that card was fine. I mean, they had us three of those. I was talking about, I think there was one before, her last fight prior to that was more so like a really bad card. I feel like a few fights were dropped off of it. So the main card, the other one, the three title fights, you got to buy that one, even though we had the circumstances that led to the card having trouble. But, you know, so we can break these down. It's just, you know, it definitely to pay for that is going to hurt me a little bit, but I'll still probably do it
this is why the UFC, they book their fights months in advance. Right. Like they're already booked to July already.
Right.
I was looking at everything. They just scheduled the Poirier McGregor trilogy. That would be July 10th. But they had everything mostly scheduled, like prelim fight wise, until June 30th. So
yeah.
I think them doing that allows them to mix and match in case some of this happens. And then any big fighter that wants to fight early, they can kind of plug it at the top and then just move everything down.
So it's too bad. It's too bad there wasn't like a plug in for this, like a Wonder Boy. I mean, somebody that they had on the shelf from a previous cancellation, you know, Kazmat obviously not ready, but like something like that to plug into this one. Cause this one's missing that true, like co-main event. You know what I mean? Like almost the Edwards Bilal might've been a better co-main here and just give us a crappier fight on that main event for there. I don't know. Something, I mean, you got to get Leon in, but I mean, I feel like something's missing from this card to be a card I'd want to pay for. There you go.
Yeah, like a title fight or like even like a number one contenders fight or something like that. It's not even that. It's like we'll get into that fight in a second.
Yeah.
But like I totally agree with you. But to get started with the first fight on the card, we have a nice matchup, which is a lightweight matchup between Jamie Mullarkey, who is 12-4 and is the +120 underdog, going up against Conor Worthy, who is 16-7 and is the -140 favorite. What are your predictions for this fight?
So, I did a little research on this one. You know, Jamie's 26, but he's lost two in a row. These guys are very interesting, though, debate, because, you know, he fought Volkanovski, right? And then and then Worthy has fought Ottoman and he fought Paul Felder in his third fight. So I mean, like, these guys have both fought like early on like studs, you know what I mean? Like Ottoman is a stud, Volk's a stud, and Felder is a pro's pro, right? So like they have fought really good guys. They have a lot of finishes, what I looked up. Like they don't go the distance, which is nice for a fight fan, especially on a pay-per-view. Would like to see finishes, right? Like, you know, nobody wants to see, you know, guys that we don't know that well as a technical fight. Like, I would like to see some kind of smash go on here, you know? So my prediction, I got Mullarkey with youth over experience in a mild upset. And he could finish him because these guys finish. They get finished or they finish. And Worthy's been finished six times. So I think he gets finished being the older guy, you know, youth over experience in this one for me. What about you?
Yeah. So if anybody doesn't know, like, my show, I go into like a little bit of detail just because I want to do my own thing. But first, we got Jamie, who is 4-4 in his last 8 fights and lost his last fight to Fariseum.
Yeah.
He averages 2 strikes per minute and gets 4 takedowns a fight with a 40% success rate. Malarkey is a technical striker who works his jab well, mixes in kicks, and has 8 career knockouts. So his power is no joke.
Yep.
He's going to want to get to the ground and work the ground and pound game plan where Kama is weak defending. Yeah, Kama's not going to want to be on the mat. He's going to want to stand up.
Right.
His conditioning will be a concern, but controlling the tempo can help with that.
Sure.
Then you got Kama Worthy. He has won 7 of his last 8 fights and is coming off a loss to Otman Azatar, that guy that got removed from Fight Island a few months ago.
Yeah, he's good though.
He is. He presents no threat to take his opponents down, but usually lands 4 significant strikes per minute. His striking is his mainstay. He has a purple belt in BJJ. He will want to push the pace and dictate the fight to stand up. He's going to want to control the middle of the octagon. To me, this could be a quick fight. I have this as a quick fight. I have Jamie Malarkey by a first round knockout. I see him getting several takedowns in the first round very easily. I see him controlling him on the mat. And then I actually have him stunning him with an elbow.
Okay.
Before he finishes the fight with a knockout, I just feel like with guys that are that are scared to go on the ground and then don't have like it said on his bio, he has yet to defend a takedown. I don't know if that's because he hasn't been in the UFC that long.
Only 3 fights. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if like the guys that has fought him haven't really tried to take him down, but he has 0 takedown defense at all. So that's not a good thing.
It's almost unheard of, I believe. Yeah. Right?
that's not a good thing when you're going up against a guy who averages 4 takedowns a fight.
Yeah.
Like this, I could be totally wrong, and it could be the same thing as Sarkhanov versus Spann, where Sarkhanov averages like 5, but then he just gets knocked out in the first round. It could turn out to be that, but when I see a guy that can't defend the takedown or has yet to do it, it's kind of hard to go with him in this fight.
I mean, he's got a couple takedowns himself because he's got a few, you know, guillotine submissions as wins, but only 1 in the UFC of the 3 fights. I see this ending fast too. I guess the wild card would be if he takes down Malarkey. Then we see something different happening. You know, can Malarkey, will he panic? You know, or what will happen with him? But I have it the same way you do, pretty much. I like your detail though. You see, you're envisioning this elbow first. That's great. So yeah. So we're mild upset we have, right? I mean, like when I researched it a bit, not as hard as you, I was surprised Malarkey was the underdog. But I guess because Worthy's won 7 of 8. But not really in the UFC. I guess that's why he's the favorite here. I mean, his body type looks a little bit like Usman, but you know, he's not gonna fight like Usman, I guess, right?
Yeah, like maybe if they build up, maybe if he had more fights in the UFC, maybe I would have been like, okay, I can see why he's the favorite. But he's only had 3, and then Malarkey's been in the UFC for like 8-9 fights.
And Worthy's 34, so like. You know, like, where are we going with this kind of thing? You know what I mean? I guess, you know, some guys peak late, but usually only in the heavyweight division is the late peak, or Jan Blachowicz peaking late, but that doesn't usually happen. So we'll go with youth.
Yep. But to move on to the second fight we have on the card, a main card, which is a women's flyweight matchup between Jillian Robertson, who is 9-5 and is the +140 underdog, versus Miranda Maverick, who is 10-2 and is the -165 favorite. What's your predictions?
So again, these are two younger fighters, 25 and 23. You know, I take age into consideration. Maverick was good in Invicta. She won a tournament there. I know the first fight I saw her in the UFC, a lot of hype. You know, she's got a cool name. You know, she's got muscles. I wasn't super impressed. I feel like she's pretty solid at everything, but not great at anything. I don't I don't know if her power will transition into the UFC because she, like, she wasn't, she's not like a one punch. She has to like have a lot of volume, it looked like, from what I've seen of her. So I have Maverick by decision because Jillian can take a lot of punishment. You know, Jillian is tough. I've seen her fight a few times, and I'm like kind of like impressed by how much she can stay in a fight without, you know, being taken out. So I don't think Maverick has enough power to finish her, or enough volume to finish her. But I got decision for Maverick. That's where I'm going with two young. I like when two young fighters fight each other, unlike boxing. 25 versus 23 year old. This is a nice little fight. Not a pay per view fight, by the way. This should be on an undercard as well. This shouldn't be on the main card, in my opinion. But you know, what do you have?
Yeah, this fight was the one yesterday that was moved from the prelim to the main card. I thought they should have did Menafield and Knight, right. But I can see why they added this because they kind of wanted like a really good main event on the prelim card, which makes sense. But with this, Jerry Robertson, she fights out of American Top Team. Then you got Miranda Maverick, who fights out of the House of Muay Thai. Jillian is coming off a loss to Talia Santos, but one or two fights before that. She likes to take her opponents down to the ground, use her Brazilian jiu-jitsu to try and lock in submissions. Yep. Like, I learned a little bit about her because she was like one of my first interviews.
Yes.
When I started this podcast.
Yeah.
And she was just talking about, like, raving about Din Thomas and how great he was with teaching her. And then that's where she learns the most out of her. And she's like, she's better in her striking, but like her mainstay is her ground and pound. Like, definitely. Her game plan with Maverick is going to be get down to the mat to keep the volume of striking to a minimum, and then to try and win by submission. She's kind of like I wouldn't say a one trick pony, but she's, everything else is improving, but she's only strong at the ground game.
Then she reminds me of Misha Tate, yes. Like a poor man's Misha Tate almost, like where, yeah, like her volume striking is okay if the person can't strike very well, and she wants to be on the ground striking with volume. So kind of like a mini Misha Tate, but you know, yeah. We'll see if she can, you know, ascend to that level.
Yeah.
This is a good stepping stone fight for her though. Like, and this is a good, you know, good to see, you know, where she's at, because Jillian is not a clown, you know what I mean?
Yep. Then you got Maverick, who's coming on a 6-fight winning streak. She is a good grappler with a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and has really good striking offense. She won her debut by a knockout in the UFC. This is her second fight in the promotion. She's going to look to stand up and trade with Robertson and attempt to defend the takedowns. She's going to want to pour in as much volume, like you said, as possible, because she's going to want to inflict more damage. That's her game. Her takedown defense is unknown because she didn't have to use it in the first fight, but she would thrive if she can keep Jillian at bay. At the end of the day, I feel like Robertson's one trick pony. She hasn't really evolved yet from how long she's been in. She, the people that she's supposed to beat, she beats, and then she gets to the tougher talent where they are stronger in two backgrounds than just one.
Sure.
And I feel like she's labeled right now as a submission specialist. That's what she is. She can take people down and do that, but her striking still needs a lot of work. I feel like Maverick is stronger, more physical, and faster than Jerry Robertson. So the way I see it now is I have Miranda Maverick by second round knockout. I bet she's going to knock her out. I do agree that Jillian Robertson can take a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And she, which is a good thing because it shows that you don't have a glass chin.
Right.
But I feel like with her wanting to get the fight to the ground, if she gets the fight to the ground, I think it's going to be close. Because then she can minimize what Maverick does, and we don't know what Maverick would do when she gets taken down. But at the end of the day, I feel like Maverick, she's going to do whatever she can to get into the center octagon,
right?
Keep the fight standing.
Standing.
The fight standing, Robertson has no chance.
Yeah.
Zero. But if Robinson could get the fight to the ground, she'll have a chance to squeak out a decision. So yeah, if she could do that, I think she can win. But I still think it's going to be Maverick by knockout.
Yeah, and that TKO was a doctor stoppage. I remember that the girl had broke her nose and should have continued. It looked ugly, but this is one of those fights I watched. I'm like, you know what? In the men's game, they would let this continue. And again, it was volume. It wasn't like that. I still have decision just because I don't know about Maverick's full power. Yeah. That stoppage was early, in my opinion, her last fight. I still think it's gonna it'll be decision, but we'll see if Maverick has the guts if Jillian goes down to get on top of Jillian. Because again, a submission specialist, like when Usman fights Amaya, or Woodley fight Maya, like they let him, they don't want to deal with him on the ground. I think Woodley kept letting him up. You don't want to be even on top of a person that's a submission specialist.
Just look at Sterling versus Jan. Sterling was baiting him to come in, and Jan was like, "Nah, I'm just going to stand here, wait for you to get up."
Exactly. So we'll see if Maverick is bold enough, like a Maverick. You know what I mean? Is she bold enough if she gets her in trouble to get on top of her, or does she let her up and just piece her up on the feet? Because again, like you said, her best option, Maverick, is to just piece her up and either get this TKO or KO, or cruise to the decision on her feet, like I said. So yeah, but we pretty much agree again.
Yep. So moving on to the third fight on the fight card, we have a bantamweight matchup between Sean O'Malley, who is 12-1 and is the -300 favorite, versus Thomas Almeida, who is 22-4 and is the +240 underdog.
Yeah.
What's your predictions?
So now I start getting into a little more detail, but I was going to state the obvious. This is my thought process. I'm stating the obvious of a matchup. This is a who is the prospect still fight. So
yes,
Almeida's 29. He was 21-0. Okay, now he's 22-4. So three losses in a row. For Sean, this is a toughness check. Like somebody just posted on Twitter, Corey Hill when he broke his leg. And when I watched Corey Hill break his leg, Corey Hill went to step back. His leg was broken, like Anderson Silva, and Corey Hill pulled guard, and he was still fighting with his leg dangling. I remember watching his leg, and I'm like, rest in peace, Corey Hill. Like I'm like, wow, this guy is tough as hell. Like his leg is hanging off, and he didn't ask the ref to stop it. He just fought. So this one, with O'Malley, when he screamed out from his foot injury, this is like, are you a real fighter or not, Sean? Does he really want to do this? We're going to find out, because Almeida, as much as he's been on a bad streak, is still 29 and was 21-0. So, this is the O'Malley. Is he a fighter or is he a punk? My little cousin's 23, does some MMA, and he was loving Sean up until the fight, even though he was almost thinking he could lose the fight, just lost. And, I'm like, I don't know if this kid is for real or not. They kept throwing him kind of bones and stuff. And, but with all that said, I still have O'Malley by a second round TKO after all that talk, and this doesn't prove that he's real to me yet either, but if he beats Almeida, by the way, it just keeps him as a prospect in my book. And puts Almeida down as a lower tier and maybe, fade him out. So for Almeida, it's for both of them, it's super important, D-Bank. But I got Sean O'Malley, second round TKO. But, if it went the other way and Sean really decided he doesn't want to do this, I could also see that happening as well. So, but on my paper, I have O'Malley, second round TKO. Not that exciting to me, though.
Yep. I got Sean O'Malley. He's fighting out MMA Lab. Then you got Almeida, who's fighting out Shootbox Diego Lima. That's pretty good fight camp. But O'Malley is a spectacular striker with a lot of potential for great performances, and he's coming off an unfortunate injury versus Chito Veras, that leg check that just hurt his leg. It was the second time that happened to him. So who knows if that was a fluke or not, that happened, or if he, because there people were saying that they think that he never let that injury heal, and then he just kept fighting. So now that he had that time off, let's see how he does. he needs to get his game plan going early. He flows between stances very well, throws serious heavy round and spin kicks from either side, and then his feinting and pulling pretty well. He's always looking to time his heavy right hand, and I feel like he's going to try and get this fight done early.
Yes.
That way he could get that confidence back, or that swag, yep, per se. Whereas Almeida is a Muay Thai black belt. He's dangerous when he can put together beautiful and dangerous combinations, and he's going to want to target the legs, body, and head in one fell swoop. He's going to try and hit those combinations. He has lost 4 of his last 5 fights, mainly due to really slow starts. He gets started slow, and then he picks up the pace later on, but he's not going to be able to do that now.
He'll not against Sean.
No, he's going to have to get going early. He's going to want to use his legs, and for the most part, he's going to want to do those leg kicks early, and then primarily towards that previous injury that Sean O'Malley had. He's going to want to test that, see how
check
the leg kicks, and then see how his mindset hits. See if he's kind of laboring that leg, or seeing if he's trying to hide the leg, because he's afraid to see what's going to happen when he gets hit. I still see Sean coming out barnstorming and then confusing Almeida. He's going to showcase so much to him that he's not going to like process it. Like, he's going to go up high, up low, leg kicks, striking, because he's unpredictable. Like, he does some crazy shit in that octagon that, like, just has you mind blown, because he's very unorthodox about it. And I feel like Sean O'Malley is going to come in and win by first round knockout. I feel like he's going to come out unscathed, and he's going to be like, okay, I'm good now. He, in the Cheetah Veras fight, he took a step back. This fight's going to put him back to where he was before that fight. And then in that spot near like the top 10, by around 11, 12, 13. And then he's going to get that fight like he had with Cheetah Veras, where he can go into that top 10 afterwards. And then maybe had that same luck where Veras fought Jose Aldo but lost. This is going to – but he's going to need to get by this first. And I do think that he's going to win by first round knockout.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it doesn't check his manhood like Cheeto Vera did. So, you know, like, again, he'll get back to maybe top 10-ish, but I like to see his manhood checked again. But Cheeto Vera supposedly fought like 2,000 times in the street. That dude's a street dude. And he lost. He said, in part, I lost a lot of those fights. Like, Vera, like, he's just a street dude. And I feel like Sean got his manhood checked that night with those leg kicks being checked. So this doesn't put him back in that league with me. And let's get back to the full card debate. You know, again, we don't even have a top 10 guys fighting as the third fight on the pay-per-view. I guess I get it, Sean O'Malley. I get it. People love Sean O'Malley. My cousin, big Sean O'Malley guy. But, like, again, this is the third fight on a pay-per-view card? Like, not even the top 10 guys? That's,
yeah.
I mean, I'll stop, but, you know.
That's what happens when you have a championship fight getting pulled and all the fights got to get moved up. I'm okay with it as like the second fight on the card. Like, you have the opening fight and then you have this one, because usually you have a decent first fight and then you put like maybe like the weak fight in that second spot. But with everything getting moved up, that's what happened.
Yep. I'm still going to be crying about it though, and being annoyed. Just so you know,
which is understandable. I am too. Like, I was really looking forward to that Ortega Volkanovski fight. But to move on to the co-main event of the evening, which sucks that it's the co-main event, we have a welterweight matchup between Tyron Woodley, who is 19-6-1, and is the +220. Underdog going up against Vicente Luque, who's the 19-7-1 and is the -270 favorite. What's your predictions? And then here's a question. Can you name that tie that Woodley had?
I think so, but let me think. Tie Woodley had. Was it, it wasn't It wasn't Thompson, right?
Was it
Thompson?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
Thompson in New York City.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something weird. Like, my memory is weird. Like, I don't know why I pulled that out, but I did that. So there you go. My notes is state the obvious. Woodley is shy on his trigger. He's been like that since he's gotten old. I think he doesn't trust his own gas tank at his age. And look, I'm 41, so I get that. You know what I mean? But in a fight, and especially a guy who was so explosive when he was younger, this is hard to transition to this older fighter, like a boxer's transition. Mayweather used to finish people. People don't know that. And then he finished Corrales. And then when he became a more slick non-finisher, he had to change his style. A lot of the Brazilians, when they were getting caught doing steroids, like, they had to learn how to refight without him. TJ Dillashaw is going to have to learn how to refight without whatever he was doing, right? So I'm not saying Woodley was on something, but Woodley was such an explosive athlete, like a linebacker in the ring. But his last fights is like, start to throw, Tyron. Start to throw. And he doesn't. And you're like, all right, he's not going to throw. And like, now we've been fight after fight after fight. He hasn't done it. So I don't see him doing it now. And Luque is a very tough matchup, for him. So my questions for this fight are, one, again, damn, this is the co-main event. Then my next question is, like, why is Woodley doing this? Like, you can broadcast Woodley. You can do other things, Woodley. Like, Woodley is a smart guy. Like, he should go do something else. And then can Luque add him to the resume? Those are my questions. What I know about this fight, Luque, 9-2 in his last 11, including a win over Bilal Muhammad. His only losses are Stephen Thompson and Leon Edwards in his last 11, and those weren't stoppages. So Luque's been in there with some good guys, not been finished, beaten other guys. He's only 29. Woodley's lost 3 in a row. Covington, Burns, Usman, again, all studs. My outcome, I have Luque by dominant decision win, meaning that Luque is going to just piece up Woodley. Woodley's going to be shy on the trigger. He's going to try to land that big bomb right hand, that he's known for landing. He's not going to be able to catch Luque with that. And it's just going to be, it's just going to be Luque by dominance. I don't see him finishing Woodley. Not an easy guy to finish, but almost a guy that doesn't want to be in there. He's kind of in there, just kind of going through the motions. And I have Luque by decision.
Yeah, what's crazy about Woodley is, like you said, he was an explosive guy, but then he won the title. And then after he did that, he still had the explosive strike that he had. Like, once, if he connects with it, he can finish you. But other than that, I feel like he got kind of gun shy once he won the title. And then he went to like a more passive style so he can just win with the title, because usually the champion gets like the tiebreaker in those scenarios. And he just fell off. Like, he just stopped being explosive. He even stopped reusing the wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that he still has as great is the way he defends takedowns. Like, I'll get that in a second, but like, he's one of the best guys when it gets to that. But like, when I think of Woodley, another guy that I put in that scenario where like that they haven't really changed things, or like they stopped doing what made him get to the dance, is Jose Aldo. Sure, I put them two in this. I put them two in the same thing, because what got Jose Aldo into the dance was his leg kicks that he used to throw that were just nuts. He'd kick you, and then he'd like, they'd hurt like really bad, like, and he'd do it really fast, and then he'd mix in his striking with that. Ever since McGregor knocked him out, he stopped doing those leg kicks. So I don't know what it is. Kind of like once Usman knocked out Woodley, who he doesn't get knocked out that much. And like, usually Woodley just gets beat up a lot. Right. But once that happened, he changed. Kind of like Aldo changed. And I don't know what it is about it. Just like you said, maybe he should go into a commentary like he tried out like a couple years ago. But Woodley is coming in on a 3-fight losing streak, which showed him get dominated and out of his element. He's a wrestler and striker who loves to throw that wicked hand that has, and then he has excellent defense on all levels. Luque, aka the Silent Assassin, I love his nickname, yeah, is coming in winning 8 of his last 9 fights, having sneaky knockout power. He is a violent fighter who loves to mix up and combine excellent technical boxing with ferocious power.
Just trouble.
He has an underrated ground game with a background in BJJ, and used that to move up the smart circuits. Like, he used the BJJ early on. He's gone away from it a little bit once he's gotten to the UFC, but he can always, if he needs to, adapt and then bring that back in. And I feel like that's what he used early on, and then he's kind of adapted to using the striking, and then now. This is a great matchup, because of the defense that Woodley has. But I still have Vicente Luque winning by unanimous decision, outstriking Woodley, but not knocking him out. Like, it's very difficult to knock Woodley out unless you're Usman, where
Usman did not knock him out.
Yeah,
that was the decision.
Was that the decision? Who knocked him out?
Only Marquardt did, and Kobe Covington with the rib injury, which is a
team. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. I meant Covington. Yeah, that's what it is.
So, what's funny, D-Bake, is I always remember Usman also, I thought, knocked out Woodley, and his mom came and talked to Usman. I can remember that, but the more I've looked it up a few times over the time since it's happened, and it was a decision. It was just so dominant of Usman over Woodley that it wasn't a knockout. He's, again, only time he's been finished really was Marquardt, and then the rib injury where he's screaming, "My ribs."
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I don't know why I thought of Usman. I think it's just because I want Usman and Covington rematch so bad that I just swapped their names.
Other than their racial makeup, they're very similar fighters. Covington.
They are.
Like Usman and Covington are very similar fighters. I mean, and that's why they made a good fight versus each other, because you know, they had to do their striking because their super grappling abilities canceled each other out, which made a great sloppy fun fight and something we all want to see again. And it's funny, they could be brothers in the fight game from another Covington and Usman, really, you know.
Oh yeah, but I have this all day by Luque. He's gonna move on up. This is like a co-main event, and it's a guy ranked number 7, and I think Luque is number 9 or 10. You got 2 top 10 guys, but this is a spot where you need at least one guy in the top 5 at least. Like, I can see if it's like a 4 or 5 against like a 6 or 7, I'll be more inclined to be like, okay, that's more of a, like a co-main event. But it's another shakeup to where it's move on up,
right?
And then I have Luque winning this, because unless Woodley can somehow bring back that confidence and bring that back, that explosiveness, which
can't turn back time.
Yeah, usually you can't do that. Like, the first thing to go, they say in fighting, is your speed. The last thing to go is your power. So at least he has the power there, but he doesn't have that speed anymore.
Yeah,
which sucks, because he was very fun to watch.
Right.
Early on, because he just come in very fast and explosive and knock guys out. And now he's not that. And then Luque is going to come in and just, I feel like he's just going to unload on him and with a lot of volume. And then, like, this is kind of a fight where I see Luque hitting him with at least over 100 strikes.
Right.
And then Woodley just hang in there. And if he has that chance to hit that, explosive strike, he will, and he could connect and win, but I just don't see it happening. I don't think everybody's game planning the right way for him now. They're like, okay, just gotta stay away from that strike of his. Yep. If I can do that, I can win this.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you on that. And again, remember, Dominic Cruz and Condit, I think, were on the prelims a couple cards ago, and now we have Woodley as a co-main for a pay-per-view. Just to keep rubbing this in a bit more on us, that Condit, Cruz are on the same wavelength as a Woodley at this point, really, right? And you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I might rather see Condit and Cruz instead of Woodley as a co-main event at this point.
Well, with Carlos Condit, he's won his last, I think, 4 or 5 fights. He's working his way back up from the grave after losing 5 straight.
But also, I don't think any of those 5 straight losses were bad fights for me to watch. Nah. I mean, like, Condit always puts on a show. So, Yeah, anyway, so just a little bit more for that. But are you ready for the next one?
The next one we got is the main event of 260, which is the title fight for it's a heavyweight matchup between Stipe Miocic, who is 20-3 and is the +105 underdog, which is crazy, versus Francis Ngannou, who is 15-3 and is the -125 favorite. What's your predictions?
So again, state the obvious. I got Francis can knock out Stipe. He could, especially dangerous in the first 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Now, normally I give Connor 6.5 minutes, and I predicted Poirier about 7 minutes knocking him out, and he actually did in the seventh minute.
Yes.
So I look at fighting a guy like Stipe. Francis has about 2 minutes and 30 seconds to do this, which he can. State the obvious. Stipe can take Francis down and dominate him again. So we have the two obvious. Ngannou can knock him out if it's in between the first 2:30, and Stipe can do exactly what he did to him the first time, because that's what could happen after the first 2:30. Now, questions. Francis, has he improved his takedown defense? We have no clue, because he's been in the octagon for 2 minutes and 40 seconds in his last, like, four fights. Yeah. Has Francis' ability to stand up improved? I've watched him with Tyson, but he's still throwing these wide shots. He's still not throwing, like, you know, straight punches. So I don't know if his stand-up's even really improved. Can Stipe's chin take a few more shots from somebody like Francis? Big question, because, you know, Stipe's 36, 37 now. You know, he's been knocked, you know, DC got him with the overhand. You know, is his chin prepared for Ngannou? Because the power is not going to be gone from Ngannou in the first 2:30. Can Stipe survive the first 2:30? Can Francis throw straighter shots? Those are my questions. What I know, Stipe learned to avoid an overhand right because DC landed it in the second fight and did not in the third. Or landed in the first fight, not the second or third. That should help him avoid Francis's shots, because Stipe is a great boxer that almost forgets sometimes to respect his opponent's power. And most of the guys that aren't boxers, like DC or Francis, they're throwing like shots that Stipe should avoid. Like Tyson Fury could avoid those shots because he can avoid sloppy, heavy shots. Mm-hmm. He has to avoid about 20 to 30 shots, I think, within the first 2:30. You know, he can get hit by some of them, but not a lot of them. And then we should see a controlled performance by Stipe. Francis's chances to hurt him and unload his clip. So he can't do – Francis can't even do a Derek Lewis, meaning that he's going to have to be patient, and he lost to Derek Lewis. But he can't be patient for Stipe. Stipe will piece him up if he's patient. Being patient for Francis doesn't even extend his gas tank, in my opinion. He cannot outpoint him. He cannot outgrapple him. And he can't outfight him in a long fight. My outcome is Stipe by late second or third round TKO, maybe on the ground. But my alternate ending, so this is a book with an alternate ending, I got Francis by a vicious KO in under 2:30. So if you're going to be betting, again, I don't know if I'll bet this. So I'll probably bet on Stipe just to win the fight. He's an underdog, for Christ's sake. But, you know, it was kind of like Connor. If Connor got Poirier in the first 6 minutes, then good for Connor. He got him. That's how it will go in the third fight as well, in my opinion. Connor can't improve things that people say he can improve. He cannot at this point. He can still catch Dustin in the first 6 minutes. If he doesn't, Dustin's going to knock him out again. This is the same thing here. If Francis cannot walk him down and knock him out in the first 2:30 or really hurt him where he can't really get away from him anymore, then I got Stipe doing the exact same thing again. That's what I got. What do you got?
Yeah, so like I had notes for this one, and I just threw them out the door because I really don't need the notes for this fight.
Yeah,
but I will say Stipe fights out strong style fight team, and then Francis Ngannou fights out MMA factory. When I was looking at this fight, it reminded me, if you think about it, like you remember when DC won the first fight against Stipe?
Yep,
it was literally right after Stipe's fight with Francis Ngannou, where they took a lot of out of each other. Like, yes, they said that once they left that octagon, him and Francis needed medical attention. They're both out of it. In that first round, Stipe took a bunch, quite a few shots to the head by Francis. But the key there was he was able to hang in there. He took those shots and then he came back. And then like you said, after a minute or two, he started to attack Ngannou with like his boxing. And then after that, like Nagano was basically done. He was right. gassed out. And then at the best part, what like I was going to mention is, I think it was you. You sent that video in the chat today, the punch out one with the DC and Stipe. Stipe's boxing where he can hit you in the side, the stomach, and liver is just amazing. Like the pinpoint accuracy he does. I think what he's going to do, like with that, like he was able to adjust after that loss to DC and then incorporate his game plan for the second and the third one. So essentially, Stipe fought Ngannou and then fought two or three times against Cormier. No, he fought two times against Cormier.
Yeah.
I believe it was. No, it was three times. And now he's fighting Ngannou again. So essentially, that's top talent right away for Stipe to fight in the past five fights.
Yep.
And now he has Ngannou again. I think it's going to hurt Ngannou that he won so fast in his last three, four fights. Maybe he should have like not come out guns blazing right away and then like kind of paced himself to try and work on things. Yeah, it's all he knows. But if that doesn't work out in the first 2 minutes, then it becomes like I like to say a crisis of confidence, like he did with Derek Lewis, where like once he didn't win, he didn't know what to do. Like he was passive because he was afraid of Derek Lewis's shot, just like Derek Lewis was kind of afraid of him.
Yep.
And then Derek Lewis just so happened to win by decision because he was a little bit more assertive in that fight than Ngannou is. Is Ngannou going to be kind of afraid knowing that he lost the first fight? Like, if I don't get that knockout in the first 2 minutes, I'm done. Is he going to have that mentality or is he going to switch things up and then maybe try and pace himself and then just like insert like explosive strikes here and there instead of like everything at the beginning, like go for broke? Because Stipe's going to be able to withstand that. He's really good at defending that, like withstanding that onslaught early on and then taking over afterwards. That's what he game plan is by game planning for. So the one shot I think Ngannou has like in this fight is maybe doing what I said, like come out early, fast, and then do like a mini onslaught, not like a big one, like trying to hit him a few times, then pull back, and then take your time, and then go back in, but do it in like intervals, not like a whole like bam right at once. Like do like interval here, like interval here, attacking him at different times, because then Stipe is gonna be like, okay, he's not doing everything at once. What do I need to do now? And then Francis needs to know that he's going to have to watch the body shots. That's going to be a big part of this matchup for Stipe is the body shots. Going after the body, hit him in the side to slow him down. And then when Francis decides to pull out to protect his body, that's when he's going to attack the head. Because we don't know how Ngannou is with these, except for in the fight against Stipe. And Stipe had his way, and he picked him apart. That's why I have Stipe Miocic by unanimous decision. I think he's going to win four out of five rounds. I might give Ngannou the first round, because that's when he's going to come out probably guns blazing. But every fight after that, I got a Stipe. And just like you said, you're thinking in my head with your alternate editing. I was like, if Ngannou can connect on a really good clean shot, he has the shot in the first 2 minutes. But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, so I was looking at it for some reason, just like you did with Usman and Woodley. For some reason, I thought Stipe TKO'd Ngannou, but he didn't. It was what you say. The last fight was a 5-round unanimous decision, but it was a pummeling of Ngannou. But the first round, you know, Stipe took enough damage to be wiped out and go to the hospital as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at Ngannou's record. He's never won a fight that's gone to the third round. I mean, you know, he beat Curtis Blaydes at a stoppage at the end of the second round. But if it goes to the third round, like Ngannou can't swim. You know what I mean? He can't swim. So You know, if it goes past the third round, I'd say there's no way. You better start. Even if Stipe gets crushed in the first two rounds, if it goes to the third round, we should all be live betting on Stipe, because the wheels will fall off Francis by the fifth round if it gets that far. Your idea for him to pull out, I think if he pulls out, sorry to say, that's when Stipe would really piece him up. Like, I really think if Ngannou lets off the gas, which you think he has to do to really survive, I think if you step off the gas for somebody as high IQ as Stipe in the octagon, it's like doing it to John Jones. And I think he's even in bigger trouble. You know, I like your idea, but I don't know.
I'm just saying it because if he just puts it all out right away, that's basically him emptying his gas tank out.
That's the only way, I think. I see him stopping it. And like Stipe is not going to stop at that point. And Stipe, let's not get it confused. This Stipe can knock you out too. This isn't a guy like Curtis Blaydes. I mean, Stipe knocked out Cormier. Stipe knocks people out. So you know, it's again, the alternate ending could be real. Like, we could be coming back and being like, wow, man, you know, Stipe ended up on Muhammad's cartoon and he's in the shadow realm with Gregor Gillespie and Connor now, and all the guys are in the shadow realm. I mean, that could happen because Francis could put anybody into the shadow realm, right? But, you know, I there's so many ways Stipe can win if he can get past that first 230. And let's just talk about this real quick. Connor was taken down by Poirier. The clock on my 7 minutes of Connor was still running on the takedown. So if somehow Stipe can get Francis down early, that is not a rest for Francis. So, the clock is still running on how much time he has to knock out Stipe, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
I'm just wondering that they came out the other day and said that Francis is like obsessed with wrestling right now. Like, he's training it. He's obsessed with it. He's doing everything with it. And I'm like,
can't wait.
What exactly is he doing? What's his game plan with that? Is he just like training to defend the takedown, or is he actually going to try and take down Stipe? What is the plan? Like,
yeah, like who is it knows? Like Nate Diaz? Oh, you're a wrestler now?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you were a wrestler.
Yeah. If he could do that, I'm gonna be screaming. I'm gonna be like, holy shit.
That would be awesome though. That would show that, hey, you can still at 34 add a new weapon to, like, you know, he's so big and scary. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that would be awesome if he did that. I mean, that's always some Fugazian in the fight game.
Yeah, like, just imagine him coming out right away, like Brock Lesnar style.
Right?
Spear him to the ground right away, and then just unloading on him. Like, I'd be interested to see how Stipe reacts to that.
If I was Stipe, I would wave the white flag and just be like, that's enough. This guy now can wrestle. Now it's time to go.
Yeah. But but other than that, like, I'm in agreement. Stipe, I have Stipe by the unanimous decision, like him just like destroying this fight, which would be good for like the division, because if Ngannou wins, then you could say that Stipe deserves a rematch. But, and then that holds everything up, because then, like, we're going to kind of transition in from that to like the division now for a second. You got John Jones waiting now, waiting there. He's guaranteed the shot, which I hate. I hate that Adesanya had a title fight right away, and then I hate that John Jones has one right away. But he's waiting there. He said, I'm in no rush for my title shot. Like, I'm gaining weight. I'm at 245 right now.
Monster.
Monster. And I'm like, damn. I'm like, if Ngannou wins, that's just gonna prolong things even longer. So you kind of need to hope that it's Stipe, unless Stipe loses and then retires. Right. Then it would be okay. Then it could be okay.
Right.
Because then you got John Jones. He's guaranteed the first fight, which I think is wrong, because I think Derek Lewis earned it, because he's been in the division all this time. He's had all the accolades, and then he just went in and knocked out Curtis Blaydes like he did. and then improved himself. Like I've become a big Derek Lewis fan out of nowhere just because of him deciding, like, just him early on with how he was big, and he was Francis Ngannou, where he had no energy after the first round, but he's improved on that.
Yeah,
he's hired a nutritionist. He's lost weight. He's added leg kicks to his game, and then he's gotten better. And then even in the Blades fight, he was like, I'm not even going to shy away from it. I know he's going to do this and that. I'm going to defend a takedown, and then I'm going to pick and choose when I shoot. Like, I'm going to wait for the right time. He did. He got uppercut. The knockout. Lights he got out. The uppercut, and then it was – and now he has to wait. So I feel like it's going to be a situation where instead of getting that shot, now he's going to wait. And I feel like he's going to take, like, a fight against Sirigan.
Yeah,
who's right behind him, because dangerous. He's gonna be waiting so long. So you're gonna have, like, the winner of this fight Saturday, most likely fighting John Jones, hopefully, and then you're gonna have Gon versus Lewis, and then you just pair the winners up with each other, and then maybe pair the losers up with each other, and then that gives time for the guy like Curtis Blaydes to get back on track. Because that guy, like, everybody was like, I'm going Curtis Blaydes. And I was like, I'm going Derek Lewis, because you're going to see at how Blaydes has improved when he transitions from wrestling to stand up. Like, his transition's shaky. Like, he just puts his head down and goes like a bull and goes. And if you can pinpoint when he's going to do that, you can just stand there.
Well, with that one, it was like, all right, if Lewis can defend the first two takedowns, then it's going to be a big trouble for Blaydes. And that's, like, you know, the same thing. Like, if it's same thing with, like, Usman with Masvidal. If Masvidal can stay up for the first two takedowns, and then Usman's got to decide to strike, that's not what he wants to do. And with Derek Lewis, if your game plan is to take him down because you're Curtis Blaydes, and you can't, and you get desperate, and now this big striker can hit you with that, it's going to be shadow realm for you. So, and that's what happened there. So, I mean, that's, again, could be alternate ending too. If he doesn't defend those first two takedowns, then we got a Curtis Blaydes type normal performance versus Lewis.
But the problem was he was doing so successful with those leg kicks and then incorporating the striking right after those leg kicks against Derek Lewis. And then he just went away from it because he can't help himself but to go for the takedowns, and then because he wants to lay on top of you for like five rounds,
right?
So, like, I think just in his head, he's like, it was like a battle with himself. Like, he was like, "Oh, I'm doing so successful with this, but gotta do it, gotta go for the shoot." And then that's what killed him, because he was doing great with just picking and choosing and not doing the takedown. Like, he showed improvements with his stand up, and then it just was all for naught because he couldn't help himself. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the outcome is of this. I want to see, like, the heavyweight division is on the rise. We got guys that are moving into the top 10, like Tom Aspinall and Philly's own Chris Starkus from the area. So, like, you got guys coming up, and then you got guys, then you got the logjam in the top five. Like, it's crazy to think that Sirigan has only fought three times in the UFC. I think it's four times, and he's already in the top five.
That's heavyweight, though. You know, it's a shifting puzzle. But and then again, John Jones, we can't wait to see him all bulked up, like a ballooned up to, like, you know, a defensive end, like his brother Chandler. You know, it's gonna be it's gonna be interesting. But, you know, we got the first piece of the puzzle Saturday, so I look forward to it.
Let's hope he's more like Chandler Jones and then not Arthur Jones. Because he's getting bigger. We don't know what he's gonna be like bigger. Like, you know, they say when you get bigger, you tend to lose. You might gain power, but then you lose, like, speed.
He's super smart, though. Outside the ring is the opposite. But in the ring,
outside, like, he gains IQ when he's in the octagon, and then loses it when he walks back out.
It's a teeter totter.
But that's our show for today. That's our preview for UFC 260. I want to thank MJ Insight for coming on with us, part of my MMA community that I'm a part of. I'm trying to get a little bit more of those guys on for it. And then, just like I said, this Saturday, I'm looking to get a live stream going where I just get a bunch of guys on to bullshit, give their predictions for each fight, and then just do it. Of course, I'm going to – the fight's going to be on mute,
copyright infringed.
So I don't get copyright infringed or hated by Twitch because I got a fight on. But I'm looking forward to everything right now. Once again, this is Cage My IQ. You can follow us on Twitter at Cage IQ, Facebook at Cage My IQ SB, and then on Instagram at Cage My IQ. And then, like I said – for Twitch, it's twitch.tv/cagemyiq. And then where can we find you at, Insight?
I'm just I don't have all those things. I have, let's see what I have. Mine is, I got to get some gear out there like all these other guys have some gear. But my handle, I don't even know what it is. It's I'm on Twitter at NJMMA Insight. That's it. That's all I got. Come see me, and I'll put out some fun videos here and there. Check out the body work with
yes,
Stipe. It was fun. You know, puts the punch
it
out
was.
Together.
Yeah, you can see so there. So you can follow him at NJMMA Insight on Twitter. So follow him, send him a message, and then just talk MMA with him. He knows his shit. You're a great guy to talk to. And whatnot, but that is a wrap. I want to thank you for coming on. And then you can Cage My IQ, you can check us out every Monday at 8:30, where we recap the fight cards. And then this will post on Thursday at noon. And then you can check out all of our different interviews coming up. On every Wednesday. Next Wednesday will be Carlos Condon, and we're supposed to interview him on Monday, so that should be released next Wednesday. Then the week after that, I got Sam Alvey. The week after that, I got Jordan Young, and then the week after that is John Anik himself, which I'm excited for. So check out all the content on my YouTube channel at Cage My IQ. That's the name of the channel. Subscribe to it, follow it, send me any comments on any of my social media accounts. And thanks for tuning in, guys. I am D-Bake, and this is New Jersey Insight. You guys have a nice night.
Have a good fight night, guys.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook, at Sportsbox Show. Twitter, at Sportsbox Show. Instagram, at The Sportsbox Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.